Is your staff culture healthy or toxic? And why is it so critical to church growth? Join us for the special episode of the podcast as we sit down with William Vanderblumen to talk about why culture wins.
Informing, encouraging, and supporting your church, you're listening to the Excellence in Church Administration podcast from ECFA.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Excellence in Church Administration podcast. This is your host, Michael Martin from ECFA. Today, we are so thrilled to have William Vanderblumen here with us to talk about stewarding church staff and culture. Hey, William, how's it going?
Oh, pretty good, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, hey, thanks so much for joining us today. Many of you who are listening to the podcast, you guys know William. William is the founder of the Vanderblumen Search Group, whose mission is straightforward, and that is we staff the church. William is also the author of several books, including his most recent, Culture Wins. And speaking of which, I've had the privilege of reading Culture Wins, and there's a ton of good content that's packed in there. So I'm going to have probably some trouble picking which areas to follow up on today. But for those of you who aren't familiar with William and his work, William, I'd love for you just to share a little bit more about your background and the heart behind what you guys do at Vanderblumen Search Group.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'll try and keep it short. I am a self-admitted recovering preacher, so I tend to ramble. But if you want to know my life story, a quick way to sum it up would be go to Luke 15 and read about the prodigal son. So I had a long winding path to where I am. It still winds from time to time, ended up thinking I was going into business, was way ahead on getting an MBA, did a prodigal journey. God kind of woke me up, and that led me to ministry. And was a pastor for about 15 years, mostly as a lead pastor, and at churches of all sizes. The last church I served was about 5,000 adults and a couple thousand kids, and a school and the whole everything. It was in Texas, so I don't say it was big because there's always something bigger, you know, how it is. You guys know Texas. But stepped out of that and went into the corporate world, worked for a Fortune 200 oil and gas company. And didn't like it, probably wasn't very good at it, but did get a chance while I was there to watch them and participate to some extent in their succession planning. And they had a CEO who'd been there 9 years, which if you know the business world, 9 years at a Fortune 200 is a lifetime. I mean, it's usually about a 3.5 year run. And they said, we need to do a succession plan, and they got the plan in place. And 100 days later, their new CEO was sitting in his seat, and now 10 years after that, the same guy's still there. So, you know, 19 years, no interruptions, and a 100-day process. And the church that I served, which was a fantastic church, First Presbyterian Houston, it's where Sam Houston went to church. It's like been around for a while, and a place people would want to go. They took almost 3 years to find me. I was there not quite six, and they took 2.5 years to find my successor. And everybody thought that was just kind of the normal way. And so for an 11-year span, this really great church had a pastor for half the time, and the other half of the time, they were looking around. And I just thought, this is insane. You know, how come the business world can do this in 100 days and have uninterrupted leadership for 19 years, but the church, the bride of Christ, is getting less than service? So I started thinking, you know, would it be possible to build a solution for the church that is as good or better than what's in the business world? And I remember I came home from work. Adrian and I had just gotten married, and we're a blended family, so we were raising six kids under our roof, and we'd just bought a house. And I said, "Baby, I think I'm supposed to quit my job, and I think I'm supposed to start something new for churches." And I've told this story 1,000 times, but every time I tell it, it's like I'm right back there. I'd never forget. She looked at me and she said, "That's because churches just love new ideas, right?" And, you know, this is where I'm the dreamer and she's the realist, and I'm supposed to say a big grand vision and she's supposed to say, that's awesome, now go back to work. And instead she said, let's give it a try. And that was what kicked off us pulling a card table out, putting it in the study of our house and saying, here's the office. And it sounds like a church planter story. You know, we met in our garage or our living room. Or it was kind of that sort of thing. And it was the fall of 2008, which was just a brilliant time to start a new business and to quit your job.
You have great timing. Great timing.
Yeah, yeah. But God's been kind. And doors keep opening, and we help churches find their key staff. We've overseen about 1,100 pastoral transitions now. And in addition to that, in a much smaller scale, but in addition to that, thinking of what you guys do, people call us all the time and say, are we paying our pastor fairly? Are we being sound, you know, with our financial stewardship? And so we've developed a little practice that helps churches know whether they're paying fairly and competitively and in compliance with the IRS, but not just paying the very least you possibly can. And a few other things popped up, like we got asked to write this book on culture because we were winning awards as a workplace. And now that's turned into people saying, can you teach us about culture? And so I guess we're following where God's leading. And the backbone of what we do is helping churches find their key staff. But it's sort of branched out into really helping them solve any people problem that they have.
Hmm. And those tend to be the biggest problems, right?
I honestly don't know a more painful one.
Yeah. No, you guys.
I remember I got to sit in on, there was a group of about 22 guys who were in a covenant group. They're all pastors of large churches of a particular denomination. And they get together once a year to try and sharpen each other, you know, and get better. And the icebreaker that year was everybody go around and tell, if you can think of it, what's the single biggest issue that's kept you up at night this year, which is a pretty good icebreaker. First guy goes and he says, you know, we decided to change the worship times, and I had no idea that was going to set off World War III, but he went and told all the horror stories that come with that. Next guy talked about, I've got to fire somebody and I don't know how to do it. He's been there and he's been faithful. Next guy talked about, I've got to hire somebody, I don't know how to do it. Went around the table, everyone except the first guy listed a staff or people issue as their main headache, and got back to the first guy, and he said, before we wrap up, can I change my answer?
Maybe I kicked this off wrong.
And he named up people. So I really just don't know that there's any single impediment to a church staff functioning better than people problems. And we're learning as we go, but we're excited to get to help solve those.
Sure. No, you guys are on to something, and I'm sure you're asked this all the time, but one of the questions that I would have for you, and I think probably our listeners would too, is just across these, you know, almost 10 years now and over 1,000, like you said, pastoral transitions, all those that you guys are working with, what are some of the different trends that you're seeing? Maybe what's something that's been surprising to you as you're talking and you're visiting with all these pastors and you're helping them with these people issues?
Sure. Two come to mind. One, a consistent trend since we started in 2008 that I thought would go away, but it's stuck around, and that's this. The smartest churches I see are hiring fewer people but paying those people a lot more money. So it's spending more money on fewer people, and it's almost like I think with the advent of the internet and resources that you can purchase, courses you can take online, a lot of the specific skill sets needed to run a children's ministry or a student ministry or a singles ministry, that can be gathered online. What can't be harnessed is finding a leader of leaders who can recruit and retain volunteers, who can reproduce themselves on staff. And I see people saying, I'll pay whatever I have to pay to have one of those instead of three specialists that are part-time or lower salary. So that'd be one trend that I've seen since day one, and it's only continued. The other trend I'd say that I've seen is one that's emerged over 10 years. And that is, this is going to sound self-serving, but the idea of hiring a firm to help you find your staff is becoming very, very normal. Used to be, we would you know, spend half our time talking to people saying, well, I've never done anything like this, and I don't know if we could do. And I would just like say to them, look, man, you sound like I felt the first day I went to counseling. I've never been here before. I don't think I have a problem, you know, all that kind of thing. But now it's like, whether it's I need to get this outsourced because I don't have time, or I don't have candidates, or you guys have done more of this than I have, whatever it is, it's become more normal. And I know that because we are starting to get handwritten checks that are folded and in the part-time bookkeeper's stationery, right? So it's not just the giant churches that are hiring us anymore. It is very normal churches all over the world, primarily in the U.S., and it's a trend that I'm hearing all the time. Our sales team or client relations tell me now, and ask them, they don't get asked, so what does a search firm do? It's just like, we know we need help. Can you explain how you do what you do? So this too.
Sure. No, that's a huge shift in a really short period of time. As we talked about, churches don't necessarily move the fastest. So,
you know, what do they say? We're really good at raising the flag at sunset.
Right. Good. Well, hey, one of the things that you mentioned that I do want to pick up on is you talked about culture. And, of course, wanted to have you on talking about the new book that you guys have authored, that you've authored on culture wins. And, you know, I've had a chance to take a look at that. And one of the things that I really like about it is that you're kind of telling the story, right? Even of the search group and how you guys started less than 10 years ago. You're already, you know, I can say this, you're winning all these different awards based on culture. And so now you're able to kind of impart that to others. I guess just to kind of kick it off the top, for those that haven't had a chance to read the book yet, one of the questions I would have for you is just, how do you define culture? And why is it important, really specifically for churches to invest in?
Yeah, no, great question. I think that one thing that would be helpful is to talk about what we're talking about when we talk about culture. I'm in this book that, frankly, I didn't want to write it, but we were, as a team, winning a lot of awards like Best Place to Work, Top Company Culture, Best Office Space, Best Office Dog, which is kind of crazy, but, you know, I guess Texans have to have a superlative for everything. But, you know, people started saying, how are you doing that? Other small businesses were asking. My editor at Forbes wanted to know. It just kind of kept coming up. So when we set out to write about company culture, the application for staff, the application for the church, is that we're talking about staff culture. And it's really important that any pastor that's listening understand that I'm not talking about building your church's culture. I'm talking about building your staff. Or if you're a solo pastor or church planter and you've got 5 or 6 key volunteers that volunteer crazy amounts of hours but don't take any pay, it's those people. Who's at the real center of how things get done that get the fully, you know, the fully orbed story of how things need to go? And that's a little bit different than just what are our church core values, right? Lots of churches have core values, but I don't know many that have staff team values. And that's what we were focused on. You ask what a culture is. My son went to Texas A&M, and somewhere on your podcast, somebody just said, whoop.
Yeah, right.
But, man, they are a cult. I mean, they're like the biggest culture there is on the planet. They're weird. And the best definition I've run across of culture is a PhD student from there. And he says this is a kind of a booky definition, but just listen and see if it makes sense. A culture is a way of life of a group of people, the behaviors, beliefs, values, and symbols that they accept generally without thinking about them, and that are passed along by communication and imitation from one generation to the next. So it's kind of the how do we function together, or what are our family rules as a staff that are either spoken or unspoken. And while you may not have staff cultural values written down and formulated, they do exist. I mean, that's not how we do it around here. Well, you've got a staff culture. So it's really not the what are we trying to accomplish for God, but the behaviors that we exhibit as a team as we try and get that done. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think later in the book, don't you kind of call it like our kind of crazy, right?
That's exactly what we call it. I, you know, yeah. Working with thousands of churches now and working with my own company and working with me, I'm kind of convinced that nearly 100% of all organizations are led by a staff of crazy people, broken people. You know, we are not normal. And the goal I used to think as a younger leader back when I thought I knew everything was to have cultural values that aspired to perfection. Like, we're just going to be perfect and have the perfect team. I don't know that that's it. I think that God knows we're broken. He's used to using broken vessels. And that the most important part of building the team culture is to say, what are the things that we do that might be crazy to other teams around us, but are common to us? What's our glue? What's our kind of crazy? And let's define that. Let's codify it. Let's not be ashamed of it. Let's hire around it. Let's reward people for living it out. You know, it figuring out what your kind of crazy is. It keeps you from the rat race of trying to copy whatever the biggest church is right now in their culture. And just saying, what did God wire us up to do? And how are we going to do that?
Awesome. No, that's good in terms of defining culture. You know, why is it important? I guess, too, as I was reading and reflecting a lot on applications here to ECFA, and there's a lot of great examples that you use in the book. One of the examples that, you know, really moved me is you tell the story about Enron, and right, it's kind of local to you guys, but how there was a culture of distrust that brought down what was an industry giant at the time, and kind of made me think a lot about how at ECFA, our mission is, you know, to enhance trust in Christ-centered churches and ministries. So I'd love for you just to tell us a little bit more about that Enron example. Are there lessons in there for churches about trust specifically as it ties into culture?
Well, I think that, you know, having the proper cultural values means showing the world who you are. And the tragedy with the Enron story, which, by the way, I arrived here as a pastor in Houston right when that company was falling apart and a whole lot of the leadership was in our church. So that was a really fun time to be a young leader when leadership was in, you know, trust was at a low. But I think the cultural tragedy of Enron is they had stated values and then actual behavior, and they were diametrically opposed. You know, the four values, I can't call them off the top of my head, was like trust and honesty and integrity, and that. And you walk in their lobby and you'd see those words plastered on the wall, and then they end up getting called out as a shell game. Now, you know, as a pastor, I know people are like, I don't go to church because the pastors are hypocrites. They preach one thing, but then they live another. And I have lost count of the number of times that I've seen a pastor that I never thought would trip up. It's just happened a whole lot. And frankly, it's been in the media a whole lot more over the last several years than any time in recent memory. So I'm not saying people have to be perfect to have good culture. Luther said we're at the same time saint and sinner. There are going to be people that trip up. I think what's important is that the cultural values of the staff reflect some of the ways God uses the brokenness of this collective people. I mean, like in our staff, we're either crazy or known for being pretty quick to respond to people. Some would say, like, y'all need to go get some therapy because you don't have to answer right away. And we think that's awesome. We think, you know, we're going to answer within a minute if it's humanly possible. And everybody else says, aren't you supposed to be tucking your child in bed? Or, you know, so
it's ridiculous, right?
It should be. That's actually the value itself is ridiculous responsiveness. And doesn't mean we don't have a life and we don't have work-life balance and all that. But it's not some goal that sounds so lofty and noble that people go, oh, gosh, I wish I could be that. You might not want to be ridiculously responsive. The values that I see that make me a little confused is when I see, and I've seen it a lot in really great companies and churches, when you see the value of excellence. Well, you know, I'm yet to see the company or church that has a value of mediocrity. Like, we really are all about being middle of the road. No, that's not what... So it's not some lofty thing. For us, it's ridiculous responsiveness, and that might make you self-select out of wanting to be part of our team. That's fine. This is our kind of crazy. And honestly, it makes for really great interviewing when you can say, you might not want to be here because this is how we function, and we're all kind of wired the same way, and we're the crazy ones, not you, which is really liberating to a candidate. You know, you're scared to death in an interview. You're worried, am I good enough to get this job? And for the employer to say, you know, we're kind of crazy and you might be more sane than we are, kind of puts the shoe on the other foot and just loosens the pressure in the room.
Right. Yeah, I love how you talk about how even your role in the hiring process there has shifted and like kind of turned on its head over time to where now, instead of trying to, you know, convince people why they should be at Vander Blumen, you're the one who's trying to say this is our kind of crazy and you may not be part of it, right?
Absolutely. No, it's far easier for me to spend time talking someone out of being with us than it is to try and tell how great we are. And yeah, I think that churches are pretty bad when it comes to hiring. They paint a better picture of themselves than they really are. I interviewed with a church one time. Great people. Oh my gosh, super nice. Going to have better places in heaven than I will, for sure. But they kept telling me about how they love the children and the young families and so excited to grow with young families. And I got there and realized they did not have a playground. Like not even the little plastic one from Walmart, that like nothing. So I was like, okay. So when I sit around and do searches for churches and I talk to candidates, I try and just shoot straight with them about what the church is like. And I say, look, my job is to make sure you don't walk down the aisle with Rachel and wake up next to Leah. You know, it needs to be a straight shot. And I think understanding your culture and what the idiosyncrasies of your team are and being able to articulate those and say, we value this, might allow somebody the ability to opt out or at least to just exhale a little bit during an interview and find out if you have a real cultural match and not just trying to get the most talented person or tell them the coolest story you can about your church staff.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's good. What I'm thinking here too, there's probably a lot of churches that, you know, maybe this is something they've thought about. Maybe it's a newer idea. I don't know. But they're wanting to know, hey, where do we stand on culture? I liked one of the things that you said. One of the tips was the easiest way that you can figure out a company's culture is by looking at the top, you know, five people in the organization. So I'd love to hear, you know, kind of how that works. Are there also other ways to assess culture? I'm sure that you guys help churches in finding out where they stand on culture, right?
Yeah, no, boy, it's, you actually read the book. That's cool.
It was good.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've found is culture becomes more and more calcified over time. So if you're in an older church, and I don't mean has a bunch of old people, I mean a church that's been around a long time, the culture has been set for a very long time, and it's not an easy thing to change. It's almost like the old wineskins and new wine. It's just be really careful about assessing your ability to change that. If, however, you're in a new church, which a whole lot of people are, and probably a lot of your listeners, I mean, it is church planting season, right? I've never heard more people wanting to be in a startup in business. Same's true in churches. The newer the organization or the newer the church, the more the culture is set by the top five people in the organization. So if you want to get a handle on how the organization is culturally wired, get a handle on how they're wired. Conversely, if you have a really sick culture, you might need to look at those five and say what in here needs to be tweaked or changed or replaced. But I think the quickest way you change culture is by changing people from the inside out or by removing them from the equation. And that's a hard thing to know. So, you know, rather than just tell people, okay, everybody go fire the person you think's the problem, we found that in defining culture, there are really two layers to the solution. So one layer is just figuring out, are we healthy or are we toxic as a workplace, right? Second layer is, all right, now that we've got some measure of health, what are our particular kinds of crazy? So for that first layer, are we healthy or are we toxic? We studied, you know, in the book we tell our story, but we studied about 150 other companies and churches that are winning company culture awards. And we talked to North Point, and we talked to Dave Ramsey, we talked to Chick-fil-A, we talked to completely secular companies, and we identified across every sector, there are about, what we believe, about 8 key areas to assess to find out whether a place is healthy or toxic, just at a general functional, are we a good place to work or bad? And in order to help people take that first step, we developed a free online assessment. So it's a shameless plug for our free online assessment. Sorry, you can cut this part of the audio out if you need to. But if people will go to theculturetool.com, tool like T-O-O-L, theculturetool.com, they can take a free assessment individually to say how do you think your company is. You can take your team through it for free and get a report on these 8 areas and how we're doing and what we should focus on so that you've just at least got a place to start a conversation about how we make this a better place to work. And then from there, you can jump into, and now how do we find our particular culture code and what we value and don't value?
No, that's good. So that's theculturetool.com, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. So, no, that's really practical. And I think another thing, you know, just in kind of thinking through this whole idea, another practical question that I think we may get is, you know, if a culture, let's say a course correction is needed, I know a lot of the folks that might be listening to this podcast, you know, they may not be the senior pastor, they may not be serving on the church board, you know, if they're in some kind of a leadership role, I mean, I know everyone has a level of influence, but what if you're not the top leader, you know, do you have any practical tips or recommendations for those folks?
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe the first tip that I would have is look in the mirror. I think back to times that I've gotten fed up with, quote, the culture or my boss or whatever. And now that I'm a little older and hopefully by figuring out what not to do enough times in a row, I might be able to have something worth saying. A whole lot of times that I thought there was a problem with the culture, I was actually projecting my own stuff onto the culture. And it's kind of like, you know, get the log out of your own eye before you start looking for splinters. And first piece of advice, if the place feels toxic, then search your own heart and say, what part of this is me? And how do I get better? Secondly, you know, if it's time to like, how do we confront our boss or bring up this conversation, you know, go give him a copy of the book. We wrote a book about 4 years ago. First book I wrote was on pastoral succession. And my mother, like, called me and said, William, you're writing a book on what? And I said, well, pastoral succession. She said, I'm going to have to buy all 12 copies of that. Who's going to buy a book on pastoral succession? And, you know, we all laughed. But the thing has sold a ridiculous amount of copies now because it's hit a nerve. And the whole point of the book, the entire point of the book, was not to have a clean map for figuring out succession. The whole point of the book was to have a neutral way of starting a conversation. Because up until then, everybody was like, we can't really bring that up. Pastor's going to think he needs to go. Or I can't bring that up. Or the board's going to think I'm leaving. Or no, let's just have a way to start a conversation. And a lot of why I was finally convinced to write the book on culture was to give a tool, particularly to people that are not at the top of the organization, to say, here's a book that's pretty cool. Hey, pastor, exec pastor, whatever the person above you is, have this copy and read this. Tell me what you think about it. And hopefully that'll spur some conversation toward, well, how do we make this an irresistible workplace? And if there is toxicity, eventually it'll get uncovered. But the last thing you want to do is go in saying, I read a great book and William says you're toxic. You know, that would not be what I would like.
That's not the right approach, huh?
Not really. No, it usually has a very predictable ending.
Gotcha. No, that's good. Well, you guys have definitely done that. You've created just such a great tool, something that's really necessary, I think, for the body of Christ. And I know that honestly, just in the little time that we've had here on the podcast, we've probably just scratched the surface, but I would like to just kind of maybe open it up here, just totally open-ended. Anything else that you'd like to weigh in on or share that you think would be good for the folks that are listening?
No, I just think, you know, obviously anybody who's tuning into you guys' podcast is interested in doing things at a very high level. I mean, you start your whole organization with the word excellence, and it's everybody knows, you know, the ECFA's seal is kind of a gold standard. So you've already got sort of a pre-qualified audience toward building a great workplace. So I would just encourage you to keep trying. I honestly get the cheap seats in the kingdom. You guys who are listening are probably pastors or leaders on the front line. And just know that we're cheering for you and encouraging you however we can. If it's by giving you free resource like the culture tool, awesome. If you go to our website, vanderblumen.com, and you can spell it however you want in Google, you'll get to it. You'll find 2,000 or so free resources about how you might learn to sharpen your skills in running your team. And we just want to, you know, while we're doing the business of helping churches find their pastoral staff and solve their people problems, we want to just share as much as we can for free along the way. So hopefully that's helpful to you guys, and just hang in there. I've sat in that chair, and I know it can be the greatest job in the world and the loneliest at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we hear that all the time, and specifically so on Culture Wins, because we've talked about that. If folks want to get a copy of that, do they just go to Vander Blumen, or how do you recommend that they get in touch and keep up with you?
You know, if you just – culturewins.org will take you to all the different avenues for getting the book and wherever it's in stock. It's kind of gone out of stock a few places, and so we have to reload, but culturewins.org, or go to Vander Blumen and you'll find it. I mean, you can fish around and find all kinds of things, but – the nice thing about having a really messed up last name is it Googles well. So just put it in Google and you'll find your way there.
Awesome. Well, hey, thank you so much, William. We really appreciate it. This has been good. I think there's a lot here, and so we'll definitely have to have you back sometime on another episode and hear from you again. And at ECFA, you guys know that we are all about helping churches be good stewards of their resources. We know that your team, your staff and volunteers, that's the greatest asset that you have to steward. And we have many resources that are available, including sample employee handbooks, position descriptions, webinars, all kinds of great tools to help you care for the people that God has entrusted to your ministry. Just visit our website at ecfa.church. Or hop over to our free resource community, churchexcel.org, to learn more. Well, we want to say thanks once again to William for being our guest, and to each of you that took time to join us today. God bless you, and we look forward to catching up again with you soon on another episode of the Excellence in Church Administration podcast.